Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Anna Sale in for Brian Lehrer. Growing up the children of immigrants in New York City is not an unusual experience, but Najla Saeed did not have a usual kind of childhood. Her parents were Miriam Saeed, a Lebanese Quaker, and Edward Saeed, the world-famous cultural critic, author of Orientalism, and a Palestinian activist. And she grew up shuttling between elite Manhattan private schools, summers in an increasingly unstable Lebanon, and dinner parties and salons at home filled with family friends, who she later learned were world-famous writers and thinkers as well. And figuring out how to fit and figure all this together was hard. Najla Saeed writes about this in her new memoir, Looking for Palestine, Growing Up Confused in an Arab-American Family. Welcome to WNYC, Najla.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I want to start just with the first two sentences of your book because they're quite striking. You write, I am a Palestinian Lebanese American Christian woman, but I grew up as a Jew in New York City. I began my life, however, as a WASP.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in there.
Yes.
So let's start with the WASP. And your those WASPy days you described, is it elementary school on the Upper East Side?
Yeah. I mean, I think that in a certain way, the first couple sentences are sort of meant to be a little bit jarring. But also, these are the worlds in which I grew up where I felt like these were the things that everyone around me was identifying themselves as, and I didn't fit in, and I was always trying to fit in. So the first school I went to was on the Upper East Side of Manhattan, and it is a private all-girls institution, and I actually really liked it. I just was completely different from everyone else, it seemed to me. I had dark hair. I lived on the West Side. Nobody lived on the West Side in those days, and especially at my school, everyone lived on the Upper East Side. They all seemed to be fair-haired and have blue eyes. And it seemed like they all knew each other, too, or their families knew each other. And I just sort of felt like a complete alien in that environment. And then I grew up on the Upper West Side, which at the time was a lot of my friends weren't allowed to come to my house because the Upper West Side was considered dangerous. It was also considered, and still I think is, somewhat like a more Jewish neighborhood. So I at some point was like, am I Jewish? Like, because I live on the West Side, I have dark hair. And so in that sense, I use those terms in a sort of like joking way, but also these were what was offered to me as what I could possibly be, and I didn't seem to fit in. I seemed to sort of fit into some of them and not really fit into any of them.
You talk about how Jewish culture was very much a part of your mm-hmm. growing up. You went to Zabar's and got bagels.
Yeah.
You had Jewish calendars in the house to know when to move the car during alternate
side
parking.
Yeah, my dad was really into that.
But you also talk about how you didn't know how to talk about yourself as an Arab
mm-hmm.
and whether that was okay.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, in many ways, my dad actually, I think he said this a few times in interviews, like, I'm the last of the Jewish intellectuals or something. He was quoted as saying, which I grew up in very much that kind of an environment, which was very intellectual and very always discussing issues and politics, lots of left-wing activists in our house. And this very, it's a stereotype of sort of Jewish American culture, but it was very much what the liberal Upper West Side was about. And I, and I grew up surrounded, definitely we, and also everyone in my family is relatively stressed out and anxious and neurotic in a very similar way to all the stereotypes of Jewish people. And I always thought it was very funny because people would often assume I was Jewish just because of the way I looked and the way we behaved. And then they would find out my dad was this Palestinian.
Edward Saeed.
Yeah. And so that was sort of why I came up with that beginning, because it's more often than not that people actually think I am Jewish because of the way I speak, the way I look, the way I behave, how neurotic I am, all those stereotypes. But and I was aware of being Arab, of course, and I went to Lebanon when I was a kid and my mom spoke Arabic and we ate, but I didn't really understand the political implications of it at all because I would watch TV and I knew, you know, I started kindergarten in 1979, so I would see like the Iranian Revolution and be like, I'm not from Iran and we're not Muslim. So I didn't connect with that, but I knew that it was sort of near where my family was from. And then we were Christian. My mom was raised Quaker. My dad was Episcopalian. I was baptized Episcopalian. So I wasn't even just the Christian that, you know, I wasn't Eastern Orthodox like many Arab Christians are. I was Quaker and Episcopalian. And so every time I tried to fit myself into what I was seeing and what was being given to me in America as an image of a Middle Eastern person or an Arab, I couldn't fit. And so,
yeah, there's this really interesting scene where you talk about being young and you're in school, and it's when the hostages, the American mm-hmm. hostages, are freed from Iran. Mm-hmm. And you had had this experience of celebration in school, and
right.
it was just an American moment of relief. And you came home, and your mother said to you, "Oh, you know, Algerians were involved in the negotiations."
Right.
And you were really angry.
Yeah, because I was six, and you go to school, and it was so exciting because they brought a TV into our first grade classroom, and we were excited, you know, in the same way that I got excited when I was watching Argo. I was like, they're going to, you know, the same sort of like the hostages are going to get freed. And I was a little girl, and it was a good thing, and it was exciting. And then I went home, and I told my mom. I was so excited because we freed the hostages. And my mom said exactly what you said. She said, "You should be proud because the Algerians were involved, and it wouldn't have happened if they didn't step in. And you're Arab, and they're Arab too." And I was upset because I was confused. I mean, when you're a little girl, you know good guys and bad guys. And I was growing up in America, and I couldn't really find myself in Arab culture or in the Middle East in general, and yet I couldn't find myself here either, because every time Americans did anything, my parents would – and my parents always referred to Americans as the Americans, as like the government or – and so even though they were both citizens and were American and identified as American, they were very politically separated from that. So I really didn't know what any of that meant, and I was so confused by it, and I just wanted to fit in.
Yeah, I mean, and you wanted to fit in, and you say that, and it sounds very, but it sounds like it was quite difficult for you, because, mm-hmm. You know, it sounded like your mother there was trying to have a sort of intellectual conversation
yes.
with you about nationalism and patriotism
exactly.
and international politics, and you're six.
Yeah.
It's interesting that in a household with it, so I presume there's a lot of conversation about
right.
cultural identity
mm-hmm.
and belonging, that you felt so lost.
Yeah, I think it was partly because I was – things like that would happen. I mean, it was interesting when I was mapping out the story. It's like I started kindergarten in 1979, and then I started and in 1982 was when the war in Lebanon started when I was a year old, but in the 80s was when it got really bad, and 82 is when the Israelis invaded, and I was aware that Israelis were Jewish people, and I was surrounded by Jewish people, and then I went to Lebanon and got caught in the war, and then when I was in eighth grade, the Intifada in Palestine started, and my father was on TV a lot, and just kept escalating. I was in high school, it was the first Gulf War, and on, and so in mapping out the trajectory of it, I was just like, no wonder I was, you know, it was constantly being pushed upon me, and I was a little girl, and I didn't understand it in the beginning, and then I wasn't really interested in it. And this is what's so interesting is my dad was a literature professor, and I loved reading and books and art, and we used to talk about that. And so people keep asking how I was not interested in my father's sort of world, and I was. It was just I kind of wasn't interested in politics or history, and my brother was far more intrigued, and he seemed to understand it. So I just let him take over, and I was just so small. I didn't really.
Yeah, you describe this similar parallel tracking of as you're growing up, and you shoot up when you're 12 years old to being 5'7",
yeah.
and you feel very physically
yeah.
awkward, and as you're feeling less comfortable in your own body, the Lebanon is becoming more unstable.
Mm-hmm.
So the politics around you are also becoming more unstable, and what's safe to talk about is
yeah.
also becoming less clear.
Yeah, and I think that this is also kind of interesting, because I think essentially one of the major things that my dad wrote and talked a lot about was how nothing is separate from the political situation or the social situation, and everything is connected. And so if I look at when I, you know, we stopped we left Beirut. We went in 1983 and had to escape under bombs on a boat, go to Cyprus. I was 9 years old. That was the last summer I went there until 1992. So from the age of 9 until the age of 18, I was completely cut off from the Middle East except at home. So I stopped speaking Arabic. I stopped wanting to associate with it. And Lebanon was a disaster, and the Intifada started, as I said. So I really thought that it was not going to be a part of my life anymore, and I should find a way to fit in. And I was also going through puberty, which is kind of the worst time.
And it was the 1990s. I mean, you talk about there are these scenes when the Gulf War starts.
Yeah.
You have all these feelings and don't know what to think, and so you just go into your bedroom and shut off the lights and put on music.
Like Pearl Jam, yeah. Yeah, I did a lot of that. It was very – I was appropriately miserable as a teenager, listening to grunge music and crying and sort of. But it was a lot. It was a lot. The Gulf War, I remember being completely just feeling so isolated because I was old enough to understand what was going on at that point. And I did fit in high school, and I had friends, and I was having a good time. And this thing kept coming in, and people would say things that were obnoxious and racist, and I would get very, very upset. And I didn't know what to do with it because I also didn't want to talk about it because I didn't know how to talk about it because I don't feel like I ever had the grasp of history and facts and knowledge, and I would stumble. Like I didn't want to talk about it because I was afraid of being knocked down in my argument.
At a certain point, though, you describe a shift where it's not so much that you don't belong and want to fit into being blonde like in elementary school, but all of a sudden teenage years hit and you're exotic.
Yes. That was sort of funny because people always used to ask me about my dad's most famous book, Orientalism, and how it affected my life. And that's pretty much the answer. It's very strange. People would always, when I was about 14 or 15, people, and I mean, I'm not saying they were not telling the truth and they didn't think I was pretty, but I think it became this, you're so beautiful. You just have, you know, people will notice when you're older. Grown-ups notice it. You're beautiful. You're stunning. You have dark eyes, and they're so deep and sorrowful and all this kind of really nice. I mean, it was flattering, and I sort of was like, okay, well, if people like this about me, I'm going to play it up. But that was a whole nother battle because to be exotic and beautiful, you have to still be perfect. And I was like, my skin's too white. I need, like, you know – I remember even wanting a more – like I have a very boring nose. It's just like a regular nose, and I wanted it to be more Arab looking, and I wanted it to look more exotic and maybe have green eyes. And that was sort of an obsession for a while too because I felt like one of the other things about me is my physical appearance. I have very white skin and black hair and brown eyes, and I do sort of blend in. I mean, I don't look – extremely quote-unquote ethnic, as they say. So I wanted to either be totally white or be totally brown, and I'm neither.
You're in between. I want to ask you about your relationship with your father, because it's very clear in the book that you cherished him and he cherished you. But there are moments where you describe a discomfort with his sort of political and public profile. You talk about going to Palestine as a family, and a London Observer photographer is with you as well. Mm-hmm. You describe it as a reality show because he's writing a piece about it.
Yeah.
So the photographer was there. I mean, were you uncomfortable with his political, profile?
I think so. I think that I've thought about this a lot because I was really proud of my dad and I would see the way people would react to him. And now in retrospect, I watch clips of him on TV in the 80s and I'm so impressed because he really spoke out in a way that nobody had. And I was always got goosebumps when I went with him to protest and heard him speak and saw the way people reacted to him. I think there were two things. I think one was there was like safety stuff going on that was kept from me because I was a little kid. So I remember finding out a few years ago, I found out that there was this whole situation where he had bodyguards with him, and I had no idea that this was happening. We had a panic button in our house. People tried to burn his office. He was always kind of being targeted as this terrorist, even though all he ever talked about was nonviolent protest. But anyway, so there was that. I could sort of feel that in our house, that there was like a safety thing, and that scared me. And then, you know, I think the way anyone who grows up with a parent who's quite successful and in many ways public, there was a public persona and there was my dad. And the public persona was, you know, being on a family trip where your dad's like, I want to go back to Palestine for the first time since I left because I have leukemia, and you're going as a family, and then everyone wants to interview your dad and you just want to hold his hand and walk and talk and be with him. So I think that some of that was more like the idea of being the child of a prominent person, which is just a very difficult situation, I think, for anyone. Even if your dad is like a famous doctor, it's difficult, you know.
And your father passed away 10 years ago in September. And there's a line towards the end of the book where you talk about, you say, each group of children has the memories of our parents' separate tragedies to defend and protect, and none of us really get it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how you feel today?
It's interesting. I feel very sad sometimes, because I feel like this conflict, and which I say in that same section, it's not really, everyone's always dismissing it as it's ancient histories that go back thousands of years, and it's not. I mean, the State of Israel was established in 1948, and when I was growing up, there were so many of my friends whose grandparents and some even parents had been in camps in World War II, and it was very immediate. And so I grew up in this world where we were really, you know, everyone was constantly taught, you know, about what happened in World War II and the Holocaust, and this should never happen again. And of course, all of that affected us, and it's true, obviously. It was a horrible, horrible experience for those who went through it. And in general, in history, it was a horrible experience. But I think as we're moving farther away from that, we're getting these generations of people, first of all, living in a global world where everyone's connected and everyone's got 700 different identities, as I like to talk about. And we don't even know why we're so angry at each other or what we're fighting for. I mean, and I say this as well, like my dad was born in Palestine and lived there in a big, huge house, and he never wanted to go back and live in his house. He didn't want to live there. That's not what it was about. It was much more about social justice and human rights and people being given equal opportunity. And that's all it's ever been to me. So when I see sometimes the anger and the hatred, sometimes even at protests and on these two sides, it's heartbreaking because we're just fighting and fighting and fighting. None of us were alive. I don't know. It's overwhelming to me. So in a way, yes, but I think that it's become, my views on it have become a little more nuanced and more thoughtful. But that was pretty much a huge revelation for me, that what are we doing? We weren't even there. We just were born. And that's the part that kills me a little bit.
Najla Saeed is the author of Looking for Palestine, Growing Up Confused in an Arab-American Family. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we will look at whether some types of cancer shouldn't be called cancer, and we'll take your calls. I'm Anna Sale, filling in for Brian Lehrer.